everyone, and welcome to another episode of After Sunday. Here, Alyssa and Alex are back with you. We have a special guest joining us today, this July 13th.
Yes.
Is that today? And by the way, you are going to get a very special treat. We did not publish our podcast from last week, but Parker has just informed us he's going to put two this week. So
you get a double dose this week. Aren't you all lucky?
Had a little break, and now you're going to get twice of us. Actually, more than that, you're going to get twice of us and one Preston.
Yes. So we're so excited to welcome Preston on our podcast as our guest today. So welcome, welcome.
Thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you both. It's such a huge honor to be able to be here with y'all today. This is actually my first time doing any of the podcasts here at Central, I think. So this is such a huge honor. Thank y'all for having me.
You're welcome.
Depending on how today goes, it won't be your last.
Oh, I got you. I got you.
And for those of you that don't know, Preston is our song leader here. He does a wonderful job. Very musically inclined individual. Did a great job with the singing last Wednesday. But we really appreciate all you do in the song service for us, especially.
Oh, y'all are too kind. It's such a blessing to be able to serve in this matter here. Just something that I've loved doing ever since I was young. Started singing when I was about in seventh grade, going to Lads to Leaders competitions each year. And my dad was a huge part of that. Ray Johnson was such a huge inspiration for me. And just teaching me how to sing, really, even from a young age. But I love Central, and I love doing it here. I've been doing this for over 2 years now, I believe, which is hard for me to believe. Sundays, it's funny because Sundays start to run together. So I'd sing a song, and I'd plan on it, and I thought, wait a minute, I just sung that song. No, I sung that song 2 months ago, actually. So I haven't just sang that song. Anyway, I'm going on tangent here.
And the longer you go, the more that will happen. You'll say, no, when, have I done this one before? Are people getting tired of this one? And yes. you've got another year left at UTC, correct? Or is this your last semester?
Oh, close. This is my last semester, actually. I'm going to be student teaching in the fall at East Hamilton Middle School.
Oh, that's so exciting.
Yeah. It's something that I'm a little terrified of, not going to lie, but it's just going to be an opportunity for me to learn a little bit more on how to teach, really dealing with middle school age children is something that I've been looking forward to for a while, ever since I decided to be a music educator.
And hopefully you and Emily will be sticking around Central even after graduation.
Oh, we do not plan on leaving here. We will not be going anywhere.
Glad to hear it.
You have not seen the last of me.
Glad to hear it. You said you, and you're not speaking for Emily, so.
You know what? I'll go ahead and speak for her. She's not going anywhere.
Okay, good. She does a wonderful job teaching some of our elementary students, and we really appreciate all of her work as well.
Absolutely. She's so intentional, and she's just so passionate about teaching those kids, too, which is something I really love about her, too.
That's wonderful. Well, thank you for being with us. And today, we're talking about really the whole revival series and the revival of our hope, and hope specifically here in through our failures. And in the two failures that we've mentioned this morning, we'll just start with the first one, specifically the failure of Peter. And we went into Peter denying Jesus three times before the cock crowed.
And that's in Matthew chapter 26, verse 34.
And we can go through and don't have time today to look it up and read the whole passage, but we're all familiar, or most of us familiar with that particular story. And we kick off the question, have you ever disappointed somebody you loved? And I'll throw that back to you too. Have you ever disappointed, or a friend, a family member, have you ever disappointed them or felt like you failed somebody?
Absolutely. I would say even growing up, going through high school, failure has been a part of my life. Whenever I would go for, we had GMEA District Honor Band auditions every fall. And if I didn't make a certain share, I felt like that I disappointed either my band director, my mom and dad, myself. You know, that was a huge thing for me. Even in college these days, too, with the way that I, you know, go about communicating with Emily and working out how we do things together and just learning more about how to be a man who loves her the way that God would want me to love her.
Well, get used to it. get used to feeling like you're failing, especially in communication. And having been married 13 years, I can tell you it's still a struggle. So
it's something that I think you have to work out all the time. But I would say failure, just specifically disappointing someone you love, I think is something we can all identify with. You know, it's that feeling when your parents look at you and you expect them to be angry and they hit you with, oh, we're not angry. We're just disappointed. And it's a sucker punch to the gut. Like, it's just like, oh, a knife in your chest.
And it's hard. And how do you recover from that failure? Because the way that we view failure determines what you're going to do the next time with that same type of situation, right? So how do you feel, and what are ways to overcome feeling like, well, I've just failed, and not feeling like a failure?
So that's a really good question. One thing that I found works for me is just doing the best I can to focus on the good things that I do, which I say the best I can. That is something I really struggle with, is looking on the positive side of things normally. But with failure, there's this kind of urge to feel like you're never going to get any better. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, you're going to be stuck there. You're no good. It's not going to get any better. But even in our lesson this Sunday, we were talking about, oh, well, God, you know, it doesn't matter what we have done, because Jesus died where we can all live and we can all be redeemed of those things that we have done. So going back to me personally, that's just saying, hey, this may not have worked out the way I wanted it to, but this has created ways in the future for me to not do the same thing and maybe even do something that would turn out even better than this.
Absolutely.
We were talking about Peter, and I think it's interesting, based on what you just said, Preston, that like, we shouldn't feel disqualified by our past. And I know, so we talked about how Peter and how he denied Jesus. Well, he was also restored, and that's John chapter 21, verses 15 through 19. And so I just think it's so interesting to think about that and say, well, if he, someone who was so vehemently denying our Lord, you know, can be restored and be placed in a position of leadership again, so can you. So whatever you've done in your past does not disqualify you, and it doesn't have to define your future.
And if you ever feel down about a failure you've had, it's always nice to go back to David, which is the other example that we had today. And I do want to read David's thoughts after having an adulterous relationship with Bathsheba, having a child through this relationship, then having Bathsheba's husband killed, essentially in battle. I mean, a lot of bad things going on at once in this one particular failure of David's. But he writes in Psalm 32, and I'm just going to read verse 3 and 4, "For when I kept silent, my bones wasted away through my groaning all day long. For day and night your hand was heavy upon me. My strength was dried up as by the heat of summer." Your bones wasting away and dried up like the heat of summer. This is how he felt. Yet he's referred to as a man after God's own heart. Mm-hmm. So whatever failure you think you have, you probably hadn't done the sequence of
events. Have you murdered
events.
Someone? You know, most of us, or at least the people I know, have not murdered anybody. So I think that's a great point, Alex. And it's also, he mentioned, you know, when I kept silent about my sin, this is how it felt. And I think another important point to note is that confession is a key step to like healing and that restoration of our hope, because it helps to confide in people, because most of the things that we're dealing with and the failures that we have, our fellow Christians have had them too. We're not, you know, unique, and we failed, we've fallen short, you know, we all have failed. We all fall short of the glory of God. So it's so important, I think, to surround yourself with, you know, Christian friends, family, to help lift you up in those moments of failure.
Absolutely. There's, I wasn't going to bring this in, but I feel like I have to. There's an article written a while back in the Harvard Business Review, and it was on how people deal with negativity or bad experiences in the workplace. Even they delved it a little bit into personal lives, but one of the things that this study referenced was an older study that said that you have to have 3 positive interactions for every 1 mm-hmm. negative to break even emotionally. Now, I don't really know what break even emotionally is defined as there, but I think just to be sustained. But that ratio goes from 5 to 1 to be flourishing emotionally. So when you have it, we've all got a negativity bias as well, right? That's another thing that this study went into, is that you could have those 5 good things happen, and you're going to dwell on that 1 failure mm-hmm. that you had. And that's why it takes so many more to overcome that, because we dwell on the negative.
I think about like aspects of respect. Like, I'm going to give you my respect, but once you've done something to lose it, it's exponentially harder to win it back.
Absolutely. And again, what went along with this study was people that were taught what's called a growth mindset. And that is that you look at failure not as I've failed and therefore I am a failure, but you look at failure as I failed. How do I overcome that? So when people started teaching these growth failure strategies, they went in and I think found 16,000 ninth graders. And here's what they found. When they taught this to the ninth graders, their GPAs went from whatever they were to plus 0.3 to 0.5, almost a half a point on their GPA, meaning that when you got a bad test grade, when you said, man, I got a C on my calculus paper or whatever, you viewed that not as a, well, I'm a failure and I'm bad at math, but what do I need to do to be better at math? 47% of more of those children viewed a bad grade as a challenge, not a failure. They found that low-income students were 30% more likely to enroll in AP classes. Adults, so when these kids got to be adults and in the workplace, it's almost the same number there, 47% more had trust in the companies they work for, and 65% encouraged risk-taking and innovation, meaning that they knew, when you say risk-taking, there's the possibility of failure, right? Mm-hmm. But they were more supportive of their companies doing this because they didn't view failure the same way that other people viewed it.
Right.
And I think that's huge as to how you deal with that failure and what that means for you going forward.
And speaking of that, sometimes when we fail or we have like trials or going through a rough patch, we can use that to our advantage. I mean, I'm just thinking of like some times in my life when it's like, man, I feel like I'm really struggling or there's something that I'm just really dealing with and I feel like I can't overcome it. But when you do, you're well positioned to help others through similar situations. So think about like, what are maybe some examples you guys have about like how a time you might have failed, but then you were able to use that to kind of help someone else along.
That's a great question, Alyssa. Thank you.
We both look at Preston. Yeah.
I really appreciate that. There was one story of the one time that I played football in middle school. It was a long time ago now that I think about it. I don't like thinking about it anymore. I'm at that age where I don't like thinking about it. But there were so many times I had not experienced something so physically challenging like that before. I did our little middle school band camps that we would do, but this was something way different as far as how we just exercise. But there were so many times I found myself wanting to quit because I couldn't keep up with the other guys. And there was just one time that I was about to give up that I took off my shoulder pads and I was going to go back to the locker room. And I said, Coach, I'm done. But there was something inside of me that would have been even more disappointed had I given up on that. Mm-hmm. And so I kept with this. And that feeling, I remember it so well of just, hey, if you know you do this, if you know you stop after this, you're going to regret it because you're going to think, what if? What could I have done differently had I chose to stop this experience right here where I'm at?
You mentioned football. My parents did a wonderful job exposing me to almost every sport possible, whether it be baseball, basketball, football, karate. So I played it all. I've got a million failure stories. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But that... that builds who you are. You only grow through failure. And, and last week we mentioned, I think, my favorite quote on the person making the samurai sword. Mm-hmm. You don't build a sword unless you're thrown into the fire, you're beaten with the hammer, and then quenched in water. It's a rough process.
Yeah, it's a, like you said, a rough process. But you come out stronger because of it. And I think it's also important to remember, I'm going to flip over really quickly to 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 9, and it says, but he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Or we can read that as, you know, my power is made perfect in failure. So for each of our shortcomings, when we fail, grace is there. And it's important to, I think, remember that like failure and the guilt that comes with that says, I'm not enough. But grace says Christ is enough. And through him, we are enough, not by our own volition, not by anything that we've done, but through Jesus Christ, we are enough in our failures. You know, he is made, you know, we are made perfect through them by his grace.
And I'm going to take us just a couple of seconds over time here, but because to bring the story full circle, my dad pointed out Mark 16, right before we came to walk up here to record the podcast. And he said, you know, when they rolled the stone away and they found that Jesus wasn't there, Jesus said, go tell the 12 or go tell the apostles and Peter. So he knew that Peter was so distraught. He specifically made it a point to say, go back and tell Peter, it's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. You failed, but we'll get through it together. And Peter was so instrumental in the early church. So no matter what the failure, if you're denying Jesus or you're David with Bathsheba and killing Bathsheba's husband, you can be forgiven and you can thrive and flourish through anything that's next. I've kept us out of time. Preston, thank you for joining us today. I really appreciate you being here with us.
And thank you all for listening. We hope that whenever you're listening to this in your week, that you felt a little bit uplifted. And we'll talk to you next time. Bye, everyone.
Until we meet again, God bless you all.
This is After Sunday.